if you find yourself in any kind of chronic back situation, even if you're limited, you can always find something to do to keep your mental health in a good place. You don't have to feel desperate. Even if you're having to go see your doctor once a month and go to physical therapy 3 times a week, and you can always find some kind of hope somewhere.
Hey everyone, my name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming injury through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you are not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. This episode features spinal champion Ronnie, who was experiencing tailbone pain for 2 years before seeking treatment. She sought treatment when she realized that her quality of life was changing and too many of her favorite activities were being impacted. Her journey to healing and recovery had ups and downs and required her to try new things when a form of treatment wasn't working. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Ronnie's story. Ronnie was increasingly frustrated that she couldn't do the things she loves with the people she loves. She couldn't sit comfortably, which meant her driving was limited. She couldn't drive to visit family, go to the theater, or sit and watch TV with her husband while crocheting, one of her favorite ways to relax and unwind.
I always needed to lay down. My overall quality of life was changing, and eventually I had to stop hiking, which I was doing 3 days a week because using the glute muscles and other pelvic floor muscles would just cause irritation with my coccyx and being able to sit. I'm also a flute player for a community band, so rehearsals and concerts could be torture at times. I had to use a special pillow with a coccyx cutout, not the donut type, if I wanted to participate. And even then it was pretty rough.
Ronnie knew she needed to seek treatment and initiated what would become a journey over several years and involving various treatment options. She started with physical therapy and injections. Ultimately, she decided to seek the advice of a physician who was one of the few that specialize in dynamic tailbone x-rays. Ronnie received her diagnosis, a dislocated tailbone.
So the very tip of it was literally not attached. So every time I would sit, it would push or pop and grind against the other part of the coccyx, which also caused the rest of the coccyx to flex in. So the dynamic x-ray was one of me standing and then one of me actually sitting and leaning back to where it was excruciating. And then they would take a really super close up so they could measure. At that point, I decided to go ahead and have the tip removed because success rate for that type of surgery is pretty high. But the recovery is not. You have to lay and keep your body straight sideways, laying down for the 6 weeks while the incision healed. Part of it did not heal. So I had debridement surgery, which actually caused, between that and the pockets of fluid that were surrounding the surgical site, caused muscle damage to my whole pelvic floor. And ultimately, that's what I've been dealing with since. And that's been about a 7 or 8 year journey.
Tragically, a lot of damage was caused to Ronnie's pelvic floor. 2 5-inch pockets of fluid formed surrounding the location of the tailbone removal. There were also some holes in the layer over the surrounding muscles. She needed to work with another physician to manage the pain and allow for healing.
Yes, so my pain management physician and I spent about 2 years trying to use different types of injections, targeting different areas, trying to find the right spot, the sweet spot, and we never could quite get it, so we resorted to RFA, radio frequency ablation, and then that really didn't give any kind of long-term relief, so we tried 2 different trials of spinal cord stimulators, one of which kind of gave relief, but it wasn't enough to go that far. During that whole time, there was no pre-surgery activities at all. I was getting down and about, down and low, and all I really could do was just lay around the house and do minimal amount of housework.
Recognizing that her condition was unique and that she needed to try new treatment once again, Ronnie began researching pelvic floor physical therapy. She found a provider who would treat the muscles internally.
It was a daunting idea, but I was at that point willing to try. She had, the physical therapist had me check in with my physician who had been giving me the injections to see if Valium suppositories could be prescribed and added to the treatments so that the medication would be delivered right next to the muscles to relax them. From there, we moved forward.
Finally, Ronnie had found the treatment that worked for her. After trying what I'm sure felt like almost every option out there, Ronnie was feeling better. Within a week, she was off pain medication, and in 2 months, she was able to get back to running.
Today, I don't dread rehearsals or performances. I look forward to them. I still have to use the suppositories every day to keep the muscles relaxed, but there are times when I still have flare-ups. My physical therapist says it's likely I'll have it for the rest of my life and have to continue. But the treatment's working. I have a life. I'm able to fly or drive to go see family members. And I cannot believe that I finally found a team to work with so that I can be in at least a manageable state. Don't be shy to ask hard questions like internal physical therapy, and don't stop looking for new treatments.
Ronnie, I'm amazed by your resilience. I'm really captivated by your story, because this has been a journey. This has been a long journey, many years, lots of ups and downs. And you say it very, very easily, don't give up and don't be shy to ask hard questions. But that really is so important for people to understand that there are treatments out there, and you've got to search for them and seek them and find them. You know, you fought to get back to your life. You fought to get back to your activities. That is not easy. You know, you sort of mentioned feeling down and feeling maybe isolated, and it's very easy to sort of feel hopeless in those situations. I can picture how frustrating it must have felt to be in more pain after surgery, which the surgery was supposed to fix the pain. But you continued working with doctors and therapists and did your own research. What was the most valuable thing you learned on that journey to finding the best treatment? So in other words, you know, what sources, how do you do the research? How do you find the information that you're looking for?
Well, first and foremost, and I don't know if I'm allowed to mention Facebook.
You are, absolutely.
So good, because I found a very, very useful Facebook group for tailbone pain. That's where I started. And the people on there are very informative. The doctor I ended up seeing for those x-rays, he's in there, and he's every now and then, and he will announce that he's doing certain seminars and whatever. And he tries to travel and get out as much as possible. He really cares about tailbone pain, because it is such an overlooked teeny tiny bone that most people, if they fall on it and hurt it, it heals. But there's a very small percentage of us who it doesn't go away. So that was my first resource. But the biggest thing was the internal pelvic floor physical therapy. I had known about it through the group, quite a few people in there who never had surgery and benefited from it. But even though I knew about it, it was just like, I don't know how I feel about that, because it is, yeah. I wouldn't call it invasive, but it's, you know, they're doing manual therapy internally.
Yeah.
So even today I get embarrassed and will just say I have back pain, and I really would rather it be out there that people know. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find, but if you keep looking for it, you'll find the right type of manual physical therapy that does do it internally.
Yeah. And I just really appreciate your candor and honesty in talking about a sensitive subject. You're talking about a part of the body that's hard to reach. It's hard to get to those muscles. I mean, women in general, you know, as we age, have to think about pelvic floor muscles. It's not, you know, it's not an easy topic to talk about with others. And I so appreciate you sharing with us today, Ronnie, because, you know, you're putting yourself out here so that others can learn from you, similar to the way that you went into that Facebook group and found a community. And At the Spine Health Foundation, we're all about building community so that people know where to turn for help. And we talk about the hopelessness that people can feel when they feel isolated or they don't know anybody who's had what they've had. They just don't know who to talk to. And finding other people who can give you advice, who can talk with you about their experiences, who can share with you their journey is so, so important. In fact, that's the whole promise of the National Spine Health Foundation, is that we can be here to help other people find others and to get hope that their life can get better. Many people, as I'm sure you've seen in your Facebook group, many people have to manage their spine conditions for the rest of their lives. So there are flare-ups that happen and you go sort of in and out of physical therapy, you learn your exercises, you've got to do those exercises. And, you know, as one smart doctor I know likes to say, life is a degenerative process. So, you know, we're fighting this battle against time and we've got to take care of our bodies and in particularly our spines, because our backs are going to degenerate, whether you've had an injury or not. There's constant maintenance. There's a lifetime of prevention and maintenance that we all have to do on our bodies. And so, you know, when you put it in that perspective, you begin to not feel so alone that, gosh, I've got to do this therapy and take these medications internally for the rest of my life. But you know what? It works and it gets me back to my life and I manage it. This is going to be okay. And again, just hearing that from you, Ronnie, and your willingness to be sharing your story is so important. I really hope that many people will hear this podcast and will learn that they are not alone, that it can take time and that you don't give up and find others, find resources and connect. I'd love to let your Facebook group know about this podcast.
I definitely will, because it is such a rare condition to have chronic tailbone pain that first and foremost, it is important to find someone who knows how to do that dynamic x-ray, because it shows flexation and it zeroes in closely on that just the tailbone. And it's hard to find someone who knows how to do that. So finding that is imperative to figuring out what kind of treatment after that. For me, obviously, there was nothing except for removing that tip because it wasn't connected. But others, it can be just a matter of the internal muscles are pulling it into a position that is unnatural. Mm-hmm. And that's when a physical therapist can help. May not even require surgery.
Right.
For being such a little bone, that surgery is, even if I hadn't had to have the debridement, it's no small thing. You're on your side in bed, not bending over or doing anything for 6 weeks.
Yeah, I think that brings up such an important point about the coccyx. I mean, all of these structures inside of our body are here and they serve a purpose. You know, the tailbone, we talk about the tailbone being sort of a evolutionary leftover where our animal relatives would have had a tail attached. And a lot of times people don't realize that the tailbone is actually part of your spine. Like, what is the tailbone? It's just sort of that bony structure that I sit on, you know, in my rear, and people don't realize it is connected to the spine. In fact, it's the very bottom of the spine, and it's that small triangular bone that kind of looks like a shortened tail, which is actually composed of, you know, 3 to 5 vertebrae that have, you know, spinal bones that are fused together to form just that one bone. And so that coccyx is sort of that, you know, sort of that end of the spine. And so it's sitting very low in our body, you know, in our pelvic cavity. And so many ligaments and muscles attach onto it to be suspended in our body. And so removing that is going to cause a lot of soft tissue alteration in our bodies. And I think that's why having that coccygectomy surgery, it's a pretty straightforward operation, but the healing and recovery takes a long time. Ronnie, tell me about your decision to have surgery. How did you decide that you needed a coccygectomy in the beginning of your journey?
So in the 2 years or 3 years, however long it was that I was working with the pain management doctor, and through my research with this doctor that does the the x-rays and does a lot of talk and tries to make others aware of this unique condition. Researching, and there's actually a doctor in Paris who invented this x-ray some maybe 10 years ago. But I did a lot of research, read a book. I knew which types of coccyx conditions would respond better to surgery, higher success with surgery and others not. And I did know that dislocation, or if there was like mine, the tip was not connected at all. It was just like a loose tooth hanging there, that I had a higher chance of having a successful surgery. And actually, if I hadn't had to have the debridement, it probably would have been successful.
Yeah.
It probably would have been fine, because I had no pain really after surgery at all, you know, after the day or two after the initial one. So knowing that, we made the road trip to another state just to get this x-ray.
Right.
And I had already kind of made up my mind that, you know, speaking with my husband, we had already kind of made up our minds, because I wasn't going to couldn't do it alone, that if that was the case, if it was a dislocation, I was done. I was going to have surgery. But it still took me a few months to actually find the right surgeon to have it done. Because like I said, it's not, even though it's a simple, straightforward surgery, because it's right there when they open up everything, and it still can be, you know, if they don't reattach ligaments, like you said, correctly, or even removing it, removing them from the ligaments, those are all connected to that bowl called your pelvic floor.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You may not have pelvic floor issues right away, but I think I would have been successful if it hadn't been for the wound issue, which is the biggest risk for the surgery. Everything else is pretty low risk. The biggest risk is the wound not healing, because of where that area stretches so easily.
I see. Yeah.
So that kind of led me to it. I kind of already knew going into having the x-ray done that I had the knowledge of it, that condition was probably going to be a done deal. I was going to have it done.
And Ronnie, in thinking about your surgery and your decision to do that, you talk about your tailbone being completely dislocated. I mean, it was just completely dislocated.
Like
a loose tooth, as you described. And Ronnie, do you know how that might have happened? A lot of people will have a hard fall, maybe a sports injury where they fall directly on their buttocks and snap that little piece of bone off. A lot of women in childbirth.
I think what mine was, I had a few falls as a kid. You know, we all do that, bruise it, and it's fine after a couple of days. Slipped on ice a couple of times as a young adult. But what started it, that 2-year period where I didn't seek any treatment, because I'm like, oh, it's just a tailbone. I come from a family of medical professionals, and they're like, it's just your tailbone. I just didn't understand how it was affecting my life. A nation of whatever damage I had done earlier in life, the cycling, just that first year, by the end of that summer, I wasn't cycling anymore. I wasn't sitting easily. And then it just increasingly, the pain got worse. And after 2 years, that's when I was like, okay, I got to do something about this.
Right. You know, I think when we were kids, we'd fall and say, oh, I bruised my tailbone, or, oh, I hurt my tailbone. And I think most of the time people don't really even know what that means. Like, what is the tailbone? Where is it even? Why is it even called a tailbone? And what am I talking about? And how do you know when you've just kind of had a hard fall and it's kind of sore and you get over it? How do you know that versus something really pathologic that needs attention like what you had? And I think the answer is persistent pain, right? It's the pain that drives you to say, okay, this isn't just I fell and bruised my tailbone. This is something is going on. And
no more movies, no more going to the movie theater. If I did, it was, okay, do they have reclining seats? If they do have the reclining seats, what kind are they? Can I use my coccyx cushion in a certain way to make it not hurt? And the theater, I love going to theater, and I would still go, but it was really, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing. You have to carry this pillow with you that no one has seen. It's web shaped with a U cut out at one end, and it, you know, you got to carry it around with you. And I hated that. I just hated it. Driving in the car, if it was more than 15 to 30 minutes, you know, you're constantly, if I had an appointment, I would time it so that I wouldn't have to sit long in the waiting room. A lot of times late for the appointments so that I didn't have to sit in the waiting room.
Wow. It's just a total disruption of your life. And it begins to take over your life. So you start planning your life around how much time you're going to have to be seated somewhere.
I mean, if you go out to dinner, do they have high top tables so that you don't stand out and sit there and, like, you know, half laying and half eating? We ate at a lot of bars that had bar food and high top so my husband could sit, and I needed to stand and not stand out.
Oh my gosh. It's just a total disruption of your life in every way. I mean, and I think, you know, I can see where at some point, you know, this was just too hard to manage. Graphic confirmation that you would be a good candidate for surgery. I can see how that was a slam dunk decision for you to go forward with that decision. And, knowing what the risks are and knowing that that it's a long recovery process. That is not an easy decision. Are you still involved with the Facebook group that you found?
Not as much. A couple of the gals on there, that actually, they live in Scotland. So their medical care options are a little different than us. One of them I'm rather close to over the internet. She actually had removal about a month or two before me, and she did great. And so if there is someone who has had any kind of close to what I've gone, she will notify me and say, hey, there's somebody over here that's facing with post-surgical issues. I like to be that support, but more importantly, I think it is something that does need to be talked about more. Mm-hmm. And research more and things like that, which is what you guys do, is the research.
Exactly. So the research, looking at treatments, looking at regenerative medicine to help with some of this, looking at the pain management side of it with the neurostimulators, as you mentioned that you tried those, and then looking at ways of making the surgery less invasive and getting people back to their lives sooner. I think that one thing that is so inspiring about your story, Ronnie, is your resiliency and your tenacity in not giving up and looking for answers. And that is an inspiration to me, and I'm sure to all of the listeners that are tuning into this podcast.
I think it's important that they know too, it's okay to get to a point of feeling absolute desperation and questioning, this is going to be the rest of my life, that it's okay to go there and be in that moment for a while, but then realize, okay, that I just need to keep looking more. I just need to figure out something else. If I can't be running anymore, I'll figure out something else to do, just to keep your own mental state up, because it can get you to a place of desperation. Mm-hmm. Then you need to tell yourself, okay, let's get up and find another way to approach this, which is my doctor is also, this has the same kind of attitude.
That's awesome. And Ronnie, you were able to participate in the We've Got Your Back race last spring, which is so awesome. Tell me about that experience. What was that like?
My doctor was there.
Yay!
He didn't know that I was participating because I hadn't seen him in a while. And
that's good that you hadn't seen him in a while. That's good news.
I only see him every 3 months to get refills and for the Valium suppositories, and that's it. And we chit chat, and he is very excited every time we talk that. He kind of has the same, I can't believe that we that we're here. Can't believe that we got you to this place. And So he didn't know I was running, and I had my cousin, who was my, outside of my husband, was absolute support system emotionally through that 2 years of the spinal solution. She's not a runner. I'm a runner, but we walked it. And after the finish line, my cousin and I were crying, but then I turned around and I saw my doctor standing there, and the look on his face, because he had no idea that I had started running again or any of that. I think I may have seen his PA in the interim of starting this new treatment. So he didn't have a clue. And that look was priceless. He even pulled one of the professional photographers over. Come take our picture.
That is awesome. That is awesome. I mean, that's what every doctor wants in life, is to make other people's lives better. And that must have just been such an incredible moment. We're going to find that picture. We're going to find that picture and post that on social media.
It's not a good picture of me, though.
Yeah. I bet it's good. Well, I think one thing that's so great about the We've Got Your Back race is that it does give doctors a chance to see their patients actually living their lives, because, you know, they see them in an acute situation, you know, where they're in pain or they're suffering, and they get them better and they say, go on and have a great life. And then they don't get to participate, you know, in that, and to see that full circle and to see, you know, to see that reward. I'm getting tears in my eyes thinking about it, because I'm a spinal champion too. So I can feel that. And actually, I just found out you're a double spinal champion.
So, I am.
Yeah. Little known fact about you, Ronnie. We're going to have to talk about that another time. But so you have both ends of your spine going. You've got your cervical, your coccyx, you've got the whole, you know, that's great. Everything else in between is doing great. So keep that up.
Yeah, it is. It is. I with both of the surgeries, totally changed my life. But the neck surgery was a surprising nice one, but not as traumatic as not as traumatic and as long as treating the coccyx and pelvic floor results. So
that's so wonderful and such great news to hear. And we hope that when the COVID pandemic is over, hopefully next year, we can maybe do our race again. That would be really exciting. And maybe I'll see you there. That would be fantastic.
I was very, very sad when it was announced that it wasn't going to be live. But I did do the virtual one. And I did it I had knee surgery, but at a different place. But I did it there at the physical therapy. So it kind of made it cool. I ran the same route as the regular We Got Your Back route.
That's awesome. I'm so inspired. I did the virtual race also, and I had a total knee replacement a few months before. And so I used that as my motivation to get me walking. And now I'm doing like 6 mile hikes, complicated terrain. Like every weekend I'm out there. I'm going for it. So
the that is virtual, really good to hear.
Yeah.
That is really good to hear.
Oh, I'm so glad you did the virtual race. I'm so glad. And hopefully you had a good experience with it and you got your fun medal. And
I did. And I wanted to make it significant, which is why I chose to do the course that you guys normally have. But I did it the opposite direction because it's COVID 2020.
I love it. I love that you didn't let COVID stop you from doing the race. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. And I'm so proud of you. I'm so enjoying this conversation. This has just been fantastic.
I think if you find yourself in any kind of chronic back situation, that even if you're limited, that you can always find something to do to keep your mental health, because that's all part of it, to keep your mental health in a good place. You don't have to feel desperate. Even if you're having to go see your doctor once a month and go to physical therapy 3 times a week, and you can always find some kind of hope somewhere. It's not the end of your life. What was the saying you said earlier about... our bodies are always degenerating, was it?
Yeah, life life is a degenerative process.
Yes. So you just have to expect that that's going to happen, maybe more for others.
Yes.
But when you get to that place, just to try and find a light somewhere.
And I think reaching out to a community where there are people who've gone through what you've been through and can give you advice and encouragement along the way, I think is so critical. And that's what we're doing here at the Spine Health Foundation. We're just becoming and being a resource to people to give them hope. And, you know, we often say life as you know it doesn't have to end just because you have back pain or neck pain. And if you've ever experienced that, you know what that means, because it really can feel like your life is over. And we're here to tell people that it doesn't have to be over. And you may have to manage things, right? There may be some work to do, but you can get back to your life. There are treatments available that will get you back to your life, to the people and the activities you love. And Ronnie, you are a perfect example of that.
Thanks.
Really. Congratulations on your journey. I'm just so happy for you. I've just so enjoyed this conversation today. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today and to share your story of healing and recovery. I absolutely love to see that you're enjoying your life, and all of us at the National Spine Health Foundation wish you continued recovery and continued good healing, and just want to see pictures of you doing all those things that you're doing now. So we're gonna dig those up. That's awesome. Yes, I would love to see that picture. Please share it with us. At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. Interested in hearing from the nation's leading experts on a variety of spine health related topics? Visit spinetalks.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening. The information and views expressed in the Get Back to It podcast are intended for informational purposes and should not be used as a substitute for professional medical advice or to replace the services of trained healthcare providers. To view the National Spine Health Foundation's full disclaimer, visit spinehealth.org.